You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And I'm Nico Bakulich.
And let's get biblical.
Let's.
But first, we got to lay down some ground rules, as always.
Oh, Mom.
I know.
That wasn't weird, was it?
People are writing fanfic of us now. I am the ex-Christian. I was raised Presbyterian. I'm now an atheist.
And I am the non-believing sort of Jew, and I am reading the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible.
I'm reading the New International Version. This is not a Bible study podcast.
Although I could understand why you might be a bit confused, because we talk about the Bible a lot.
And it's also definitely not for kids. There's often extremely objectionable material that is just in the Bible, and there's nothing we can do about it. We could do something about the cussing, but we choose not to.
When are you going to release your Bowdlerized version of the Bible?
I feel like that's a project that the King James Version actually has done much better than I could ever do.
Huh.
And on that note, we are going to talk about the Book of Psalms today. But first, something very special is going to happen. Because we have on the phone my friend Phil Hsu. He is finishing his PhD in molecular biology at Harvard. Obviously, I don't know him through that. I know him from college when we were both on Quiz Bowl team together. Quiz Bowl, if you don't know, is competitive trivia for those of us who are extremely competitive but can't play sports. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey,
thank
Phil.
You for coming on. And thank you for writing some trivia questions for us.
That's right. So I recently rated and reviewed this podcast on iTunes, which all listeners should do.
You brave, brilliant man.
But I was disparaged on air for insisting that you were missing on all the fun King James Version euphemisms.
It's true.
And so I made this quiz to test your knowledge.
Just listeners, Phil did not ask me like, oh, hey, would you like some trivia questions? He just sent me some. Like, that's what our friendship is based on.
I was called out on the radio, so I had very little choice in the matter.
It's very kind of you to call this the radio.
How this is going to work is I'll give you 12 euphemisms, and you'll tell me what they really mean. So they'll be worth 10 points each, and depending on your performance, you'll receive a biblical character that your performance corresponds to.
Oh, whoa. I didn't know that. I'm excited.
And listeners can play along, too.
Yay, listeners.
I'm not so sure about that. Yay, listeners. Don't encourage them.
All right. Let's get started. Phil, give us these questions.
All right. So we'll start with Genesis. So Abraham's, dying, as he did.
as we all do
as
someday.
As we all will one day. Yeah. Thanks for the reminder, Phil.
Said unto his eldest servant of his house, and so I'm quoting from the King James Version, he said to his servant, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh. So tell me what that might be a euphemism for.
I mean, I assume that's swearing on his testicles,
yes.
i.e. testifying.
Mm-hmm.
That's our final answer.
I agree.
That's pretty much right. So according to Rashi, this famous 11th century French rabbi, it didn't literally mean the thigh. So apparently, when you are swearing, you have to hold something sacred, such as the Torah. And since the circumcision was Abraham's first commandment, and hence sacred object, what Rashi claims is happening is Abraham is asking his servant to grab his penis.
I see.
So I'll give you 8 points for that.
All right,
okay.
Cool.
I think that's fair.
So we'll move to Exodus.
Okay.
So tell me what it means when her fruit depart from her and yet no mischief follow.
Her fruit depart from her and yet no mischief follow.
I mean, fruit sounds like fruit of the womb, right? But I don't...
It's womb adjacent.
It's definitely womb related.
So we have to give a call. I think it's either kids or menses.
Let's go menses.
Menses. Put it up on the big board, Phil.
The answer is, so if people are fighting and they hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely, but there is no serious injury, the offender must be fined whatever the husband demands and the court allows.
All right.
So it is not menses. It's when you...
premature birth due to shenanigans.
Yeah. Yes. That's what they put on the cause of birth. I don't think they put a cause of birth on the certificate usually, but in this case, they would have to.
All right. So Leviticus, tell me what it means, her that is sick of her flowers.
Her that...
I really don't know.
Her that is sick of her... She's sick of her flowers. I mean, it's going to make me sound a little weird, but I'm going to go back to menses on this one.
You know how much I love talking about periods.
And I know how much patriarchs of every stripe hate talking about
it. True. All right. We're going to go with menstruation again.
That's absolutely right. So
yes!
A woman in her monthly period... Or I also would have accepted if a woman have an issue and her issue in her flesh be blood.
that is I have another. An issue right now.
What's the issue? Is it of blood? Okay.
All right. So we're in Deuteronomy now.
Hooray.
And we're talking about when, you know, a man gets sick of her husband, of her wife. What happens? So now... Then shall the father of the damsel and her mother take and bring forth the token of the damsel's virginity unto the elders of the city in the gate. So tell me what the tokens of the damsel's virginity is, and what happens to the man, if they can, to the husband, if they can produce that, for 2 bonus points.
So I have a guess about the tokens.
Okay.
I think they're the bloodstained bedsheets from the night of the marriage.
Oh, interesting. I like that.
What happens to the father when the husband? What happens to the husband when they get sick of him? What happens to the husband? He pays the dowry price and he's set free.
Oh, is that okay? We'll go with that.
It's absolutely about the bloody sheet.
But oh,
yes.
Awesome.
What happens to him? When they produce this bloody sheet, because the bloody sheet is, of course, infallible evidence, they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give this to the woman's father. And
he is her rightful owner.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Exactly. She shall continue to be his wife. And he must not divorce her as long as he lives.
Oh, one of those. One of those.
All right, so what do we get, 5 on that?
Full 10 points, but no bonus points.
Oh, okay.
All right, so we're still in Deuteronomy.
Okay.
More laws. Thou shalt not bring the hire of a whore or the price of a dog into the house of the Lord thy God for any vow. Tell me what the price of a dog might be.
Whoa.
Hire of a whore or the price of a dog. Do you have any idea?
No. I mean, dogs are like, they eat dead bodies, right? That's like a stereotype about dogs in the Old Testament.
The juxtaposition
An unfair stereotype about dogs.
The juxtaposition between the hire of a whore and the price of a dog makes me think that it's like, it's not a real dog.
Right. Yeah. But so I'm trying to think like what a metaphorical dog would do if the idea is that dogs are associated with dead bodies.
A dog of war.
But I honestly have no idea. the price of a dog? I honestly have no idea.
10 shekels silver.
All right, that's our answer. 10 shekels silver.
A dog is slang for a male prostitute.
Okay.
You must not bring the earnings of a female prostitute or a male prostitute into the house of the Lord. Because
well,
the
fair.
Lord your God detests them both.
Well, that's good. Want. That's gender equal, at least.
Yeah.
A little, you know, a little phobic, but whatever.
All right, we're still in Deuteronomy, question 6. So tell me what happens. Tell me what it means if a woman taketh him by the secrets. And what do you think the punishment for that is?
Oh, that was...
I know
okay,
this. I know
secrets
this.
We did cover in our Deuteronomy episode. Our guest, J.W. Friedman, had secrets as being the male genitals.
Yes. I know what happens if she touches him.
All right, go ahead.
That she loses her hand.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
you guys are
that's our answer.
So brilliant. That is exactly right.
Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. What's up?
All right, judges now. So the Philistines took him, so Samson, put on his eyes, brought him down to Gaza, and bound him with fetters of brass. And he did grind in the prison house. So what is the euphemism here? And what does it mean?
I believe he is literally grinding grain. He's like running he's like walking in a circular motion in the mill to grind grain.
I think you're absolutely right.
So here, this is really bizarre. Some rabbinical authorities believe grind is a euphemism for sex and to impregnate.
What?
The second century, I know. I was also very shocked when I learned this.
I mean, we did talk about the other uses of the word grinding in our Job episode, which you have not heard yet.
So Rabbi Johanan from the second century says, grind means nothing less than sexual transgression. In Job, what did they say?
May she grind another man's grain.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or I have lurked in a neighbor's doorway, may my wife grind with another. And this brings us to the famous proverb that Rabbi Papa alludes to when he says, before the wine drinker, set wine. Before a plowman, a basket of roots. And apparently what this means is they put unto Samson women to impregnate.
Really? Wow.
So I have a hard time believing this, but apparently the rabbinical authorities didn't.
That's crazy. I mean, it does seem a lot simpler to just make him do like hard labor in prison.
Right.
But
then put him out to stud.
If it is a weird sex slave thing, that also sounds quite horrible.
Yeah. But the grind, yeah, exactly. In Job, it's definitely sexual. So it's a little weird.
All right.
So Ezekiel, this is one of my favorites.
All right. We have not read Ezekiel yet.
Yes. So this is a tiny spoiler. She doted upon her paramours, whose flesh is the flesh of asses, and whose issue is the issue of horses.
I can guess that one.
So I assume he has a dick as big as a donkey's, and he produces much ejaculatory fluid.
This is perfectly correct for a full 10 points.
Why? Why? Why, Bible? Why?
All right, so now we're going to switch. So sometimes the King James Version is actually more scandalous than, for example, the NIV. So I'll give you the following NIV euphemism, and you give me the King James Version translation.
Oh, we're not going to be able to do this at all.
Let's give it a shot.
We're at Joshua, and Joshua chapter 5, number 3. So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelites at Gilbeth Haraloth.
I remember this passage, but I have no idea what it is in the KJV. I mean, it's going to be like Foreskin Town or something
Foreskin
like that.
Foreskin Town?
I don't know. I mean, that's...
okay, that's our answer. Foreskin Town.
Yep.
I give you 5 points for
excellent.
Foreskin Town. So... I have in the KJV, and Joshua made him sharp knives and circumcised the children of Israel at the hill of the foreskins.
Whoa, not bad. Not bad.
And this, of course, the hill of the foreskins is my heavy metal band's name.
It's a Jewish heavy metal band.
All right, we're at 1 Kings. And
wait, you're not going to get upset at him for saying 1 Kings? I said 1 Kings and you dove down my throat.
I'm sorry. I've become conditioned by Donald Trump's pronunciations of things.
I don't believe it.
He's the new normal.
Kings, the young men who had grown up with him, so him is Rehoboam, and we remember that as David's son. So Rehoboam is trying to figure out what to do with his subjects. The young men said to him, "These people have said to you, 'Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but make our yoke lighter.' Now tell them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's waist.'"
Now, we definitely talked about this as a dick measuring contest in our First Kings episode, but I assume that the KJV does not actually use the word dick. So what euphemism...
What euphemism
think,
applies there?
Yeah.
Let's look back. My father's flesh.
We have secrets.
My father's thigh.
Ooh.
I don't know. It's going to be something along those lines. You take the guess.
Yeah, we'll say thigh.
Yeah, I'll give you that. So he says, "My little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins."
Loins. Okay. Well. Yeah. Yeah. I have credit on that, I think.
Trying to score your own quiz here.
I'm trying to sabotage myself.
2 Kings. "The whole house of Ahab shall perish. I shall cut off from Ahab every last male in Israel, slave or free." So tell me what they use for a euphemism for male.
I mean, male is a dirty word.
in some circles of the internet, yes.
This is pretty much impossible if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, well, what about like something like a dog, right? Like
every last dog?
A male prostitute dog. You know, I don't know. I assume it's going to be something insulting.
I have no comments.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We're going to say dog.
Yeah.
That's surprisingly close. "For the whole house of Ahab shall perish, and I will cut off from Ahab him that pisseth against the wall, and him that is shut up and left in Israel."
That was surprisingly close.
And they use this term 6 times, "him that pisseth
really?
Against the wall." I was shocked when it was not mentioned in the 2 Kings episode, and then I realized it was not. They
Alas,
just used the word male.
They covered that up in the NIV.
All right, so we got one final question.
Right.
Uh-oh, okay.
To recap your knowledge, make sure you've learned everything. We're again with David and Goliath. And Goliath says to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the beasts of the field."
What's the euphemism?
Mm-hmm.
Can you give that to us one more time, please?
Goliath said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the beasts of the field."
Okay, so there are a couple of those in there. Am I a dog? Am I a prostitute that you come at me with sticks? I shall give your flesh. I'll feed your junk to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Were there any more? Did you hear?
I don't know. Maybe sticks. Okay. Dog, male prostitute, flesh, penis.
Mm-hmm.
Flesh penis.
Flesh penis.
That's my metal band.
Yes.
That's 10 points. You've learned so well.
Yay.
Yay.
I think maybe you could imagine there's some sexual innuendo with the phrase "come to me." But you never know what they're actually trying to say.
This is a family podcast, Phil. Come on.
All the other stuff was fine, but now you've crossed the line.
Yeah.
You've got, let's see, I will total up the points.
Oh, yeah. So out of a possible 120.
That's right. 83, which is a very impressive score.
I mean, it's not that impressive.
It's a D.
It's like a D.
I'll tell you who you're smarter than.
All right. I always love to hear about that.
Nabal, because he is just like his name. His name means fool, as his wife Abigail said of him. You're smarter than Jephthah.
Yeah.
Whoever comes out of my doors, out of my house to meet me when I return, shall be the Lord's.
I will offer it up. Sacrificed his own daughter. Yeah.
You know, you didn't pledge to burn your own daughter.
Yet.
You're smarter than Samson, who doesn't even know what a riddle is.
That's true. It was not a riddle.
Yeah, it was not a riddle.
You're smarter than Solomon, who's, you know, pretty smart, but also didn't really remember the guy
whole,
above.
Yeah.
So you are as smart as Rachel.
Ooh.
Oh.
Because you remember when Rachel had taken who is Jacob's wife, had taken her father's idols.
Oh, yes.
Stole them, and so Laban comes to search for his idols, but found them not. So Laban's like, okay, I gotta search everything, and Rachel, I assume, is sort of panicking, but then she remembers the one thing that biblical men are terrified of. So she says to her father, "Let me not displease my lord, that I cannot rise up before thee. For the custom of women is upon me."
Ah. Mm.
And of course, she knows Laban is terrified of, as all biblical men are, I assume, of the very idea of menstruation. So her brilliance prevents her from getting those idols taken back from her. So good work.
Yay. Who's smarter than us?
Who's smarter than you? Zipporah. So you remember when...
For the emergency circumcision?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it came to pass by the way in the inn that the Lord met him and sought to kill him, Moses, for apparently no reason.
Yeah, it's unexplained.
Zipporah, in her genius, reads God's mind somehow. Yeah, and circumcises her child. And she knows that's... You know, if there's one thing that God cares about, it's circumcision.
It is. It's his main priority.
Exactly. It's weird, circumcision.
It's weird.
If you think about it, yeah.
It keeps going. Like
the circumcision? Or
yeah.
I mean, traditionally it stops.
The Bible keeps caring about it.
Oh, I've learned.
It's very strange.
Not if you do it right. It doesn't keep going.
They just keep cutting.
Yeah. Got to get a new moil.
So congratulations. You're basically Bible experts is what I've come
Excellent.
To realize.
And I've only read half of it, so.
I'm so excited to use this information to win internet fights.
Win internet fights and new friends.
And okay. New friends, of course, yes.
Yeah.
I know there's, like, the best way to make a friend is to walk up to a stranger and start quoting the Bible.
Yeah, solid.
All right, Phil, thank you so much for writing these. It was an absolute delight having you on. And I'll see you on Facebook.
That's right. Take care.
Thanks, Phil. Yeah. That was fun.
It was. Thank you again, Phil.
Thanks, Phil. But we have other important business to discuss.
Okay, fine.
Because we did read a book of a Bible this week.
Oh, I doubt it. I dwove.
So we read Psalms, obviously, because we stated that at the top of the episode, but you might have gotten distracted by that fun quizzo. So we're going to talk a little bit about Psalms. Lauren?
Yeah. Yes?
I can see in your bright, beautiful eyes that you have something you want to say.
I do. And that is that... We're talking about the Book of Psalms.
That's what I just said.
A.K.A. the Psalter.
What?
aka the Psalter, P-S-A-L-T-E-R. That's what you usually call it when it's just by itself, without the rest of the Bible around it.
No pepper.
And no pepper. Just a Psalter, please. The Hebrew name is Tehillim, which is praises.
Okay.
And Psalm is like a Greek word for like playing a harp or like a song set to harp music.
Okay.
That I guess just was kind of generally applied. So the whole book, if you're not familiar, I mean,
I'm familiar.
Yeah, you just read it. Any listeners who may not be familiar, it's a bunch of like prayer poem things. Mm-hmm. And they've been being collected and edited for hundreds of years. What?
Did you flash translate that out of some other language in your head?
Yeah, it was fucking dumbass, which is what I speak in my head. But so some of them are like really old. Some of them seem to be from before the Babylonian exile. Some are definitely from after. And the canon of Psalms has changed a lot over hundreds of years. I mean, obviously it's been in place for a while
now. It's been on lock for a little while. Yeah. The intro to Psalms in my Bible lets me know that there are several genres of psalm.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty clearly defined. There's a hymn, which is like a call to worship. There's an individual petition, which is like a person asking God for something. There's a communal petition, which is the same except a bunch of people, not just one dude.
Mm. Communal.
And there's individual thanksgiving, where it's like, yeah, thanks, bro.
I mean, yeah.
It's
thanks,
me.
Thanks, God.
Your friend.
God, bro. A lot of them are traditionally attributed to David, but like...
That can't possibly be true.
Who knows? Yeah. And then other ones are attributed to Asaph and the sons of Korah. That's like at the beginning of some of these psalms. I don't know who those people are.
Korah is from The Last Airbender, right?
Mm-hmm. Some are set to the tunes of songs. Like it'll say at the beginning that this is set to the tune of Lilies of the Covenant.
Sure. Or you'd say Rhythm Changes.
Doe of the Morning. Or my favorite, Do Not Destroy.
Do Not Destroy. That's a good name
for an
album.
There were several psalms that are supposed to be sung to the tune of something called Do Not Destroy, which seems like it probably got destroyed at some point because I don't think we know what it is.
Sounds like a song by Metric or something, you know?
Yeah, totally. And then my Bible also has a lot of notes about like how ancient Hebrew poetry works. Like it's
That sounds exciting.
I know. It's not based on like rhyme and meter.
Okay.
It's based on like structural conventions.
It's based on the feel of it, man.
So like if you use an image in the first line, then you have to use like a certain other image in the last line or something like that.
Okay.
So my Bible has like hundreds and hundreds of words in the footnotes that are like, well, you see, this one has framing clauses. And it's like, basically what I'm trying to say is there's a lot that's lost in translation. Like, it really does not convey any poetry to have like a 500-word footnote about framing clauses.
It really doesn't.
All right. Let's take a break.
Yeah, let's take a quick break and then we'll be back to dive in. We'll get into the meat of these psalms. I expect it to taste like mutton.
I'm a vegetarian.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Nico.
And I'm Lauren.
And we are talking about the Book of Psalms.
Psalms.
So this is like not a standard Bible book because there's no story. So, you know, usually we like do, I'm going to give a little inside baseball with y'all.
Okay.
Usually we go the first half of the story. Then we take a break. Then we do second half.
Oh my God,
story.
Stop revealing these secrets. These are protected trade secrets.
But there's no story to split in twain today. So instead, we're just going to talk about Psalms. Overall, what were your thoughts on this book here? How did it strike you, my dear?
Well, this is the book I'm most familiar with of the ones that we've read so far.
Oh, interesting.
So I wasn't surprised by any of the content per se.
Okay, it would be kind of hard to be surprised.
But I was actually really surprised by reading it in the context of everything that came before it. Mm-hmm. Because to me, it feels like we just flipped a switch and we just went from Judaism to Christianity. So partially I'm basing this on my own experience because like just this is language that Christians use to pray. There's lots of hymns and other types of worship songs that are made from these psalms, and I could sing several of them, but I'll spare everybody. And Psalms is like a common book that Christians will refer to for like, I don't know, guidance type of stuff. I used to like read it a lot when I was an angsty teenager and was hoping to find solace.
How'd that work?
Didn't work.
Oh, well.
Okay. Yeah. Turns out my problems as a teenager were pretty different from King David's problems. But also, partially it's my own experience, but there's also a big shift in the way the text is talking about God. Like it was all of a sudden something that I recognized. Like when we were talking about Job last week, and I was like, oh, this is wrong. Like this feels blasphemous. This isn't what I'm used to talking about when I talk about the Bible or God. But then Psalms, I was like, yes, okay. Like I'm comfortable. Like this is what the Bible should be. We've got like de-emphasizing sacrifices. It says like you should still make sacrifices to God, but he doesn't need them.
Yeah, there's not a lot of talk about like burning things on altars or anything.
I mean, it specifically says like God doesn't need that. You should just do it. Talking about God as a father instead of as like a king or a judge. Talking about an afterlife.
Does it really talk about an afterlife, though? I mean, it mentions both Sheol and the pit.
Well, it also talks about, you know, God will redeem my life from the grave. He will surely take me to himself. Oh, there's another one in there that I didn't write down.
No, that does ring a bell when you say that. I vaguely remember it saying something about like even in death, you know, my life will mean something because I gave my life to God.
I will go through the gates of righteousness.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it doesn't explicitly say heaven or hell, but it's definitely the language that Christians now use to describe heaven and hell. So even if I'm projecting that onto it, like that's...
It's fertile ground for you to plant your projection in, if I may mix several metaphors.
Yeah. And most importantly, we have a bunch of talk about forgiveness. Now that has not really been a thing up until now. Like God has punished sin. There hasn't been a big emphasis on forgiveness.
True. There have been several, I guess, like key moments of forgiveness when people have like done penance and been forgiven, but they haven't escaped all punishment usually. And it hasn't been like the focus of the story.
Right. So then like compare that to like Psalm 51. I was sinful at birth. Sinful from the time my mother conceived me. Cleanse me with hyssop and I will be clean. Wash me and I will be whiter than snow. I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I was talking about not being in Job. And this is like where I belong. Like I'm sinful, I'm unclean, I'm worthless. And I need to spend all my free time asking God to cleanse me.
Got it. Understood.
That's how I was raised.
That's where all your free time goes.
Yeah. So, and we even have the line, the meek will inherit the earth.
That's true.
Which I did not realize Jesus was quoting. I thought that was original. So, yeah, like all of a sudden I'm completely in my comfort zone and I understand everything and feel just like totally on board.
Interesting. I was also struck by its juxtaposition with Job, specifically for the fact that many of the Psalms in here that entreat God to directly do something, and many of them do. It seems like many of them ask God to like beat up on their adversaries or the people that are torturing them. But they just as well ask God to save them or to redeem them or to bring them all the treasures that they were promised or whatever.
Forgive them.
Forgive them. And I'm like, did you guys not just read Job? Like, that's not God's game. He came down to earth to tell Job specifically that this was not what he was involved in.
Right.
He's like, I'm here. Your righteousness reflects well on me, but justice doesn't concern me. And I'm like, did nobody tell these people?
Right.
Like, you're just shouting into an uncaring void that created you, and that was the last moment that they cared about you. So, I mean, obviously, those are two different ways to look at the theology of this, but they're back to back, which I thought was insane. And so I think that addresses, like, our theological ideas about some of the poetry, but from a literary point of view, what did you have any specific, like, takeaways from this huge block of stuff?
I mean, like I said, a lot of the language seems to be lost in translation, mm-hmm. so it's kind of hard to judge it as poetry or, like, literature, you know, in the way that it was meant to be perceived. I mean, I do have, you know, my favorites and least favorites.
Okay, we'll definitely do those. But before we get to those, I just wanted to say that when you take a bunch of these, like, lamentations in a row, mm-hmm. it really paints this strange picture of, like, paranoid, deeply scared, alone individuals.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, it stacks up all of these lamentations in a row that are, like, it's like, you know, a prayer for the friendless, or, like, a prayer for one who's deeply injured, or, like, a prayer for the lonely and sick. And it's like, all of these people crying out for some sort of recognition all in a row.
Yeah.
It's very strange, especially because a lot of these poems reuse these same little blocks of language or blocks of imagery,
mm-hmm.
which makes it really confusing to, like, read 150 of them in a row, mm-hmm. which was a stupid idea.
It's also not meant to be read like 150 in a row. You're supposed to, like, perform one at a service.
Sure.
And then next week you perform a different one.
But it turns into this weird, like, procedurally generated prayer thing, you know, where you, like, plug in a certain set of images or phrases, and then you get out the formula for a prayer.
So that's, like, how Christians pray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for Protestants, at least, prayer is usually spontaneous. Like, we don't say, like, well, we say the Lord's Prayer, but we don't say, like, Hail Mary or anything like that. You're making it up on the spot, but you can draw on all these blocks of language. Yeah.
It's just weird to see it all, like, laid bare on the page, where you see, like, here's a bunch of combinations. And then when you're reading them all through, some stick out because you're like, oh, hey, that's got a new image in it. Or, like, that's not the same structure as all of these other ones down to the exact images,
right.
You know?
I have a few things that stuck out to me.
Okay.
I really liked Psalm 12, the wicked freely strut about.
Oh, do they?
I liked, because of your wrath, there is no health in my body. My wounds fester and are loathsome. My back is full of searing pain. My friends and companions avoid me because of my wounds.
I love all of the lamentation stuff because it's all about, they get really caught up on these few phrases. Like, they have enemies in every corner.
Mm-hmm.
The enemies' mouths are spitting words at them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they say. That the words are coming out of mouths, you know, and then, like, everything is ashes. My food is ashes.
Yeah.
My drink is ashes.
Yeah.
All the lamentations are great because they all, it's like, and the structure is exactly the same every time. They spend the first two thirds digging themselves into a hole of despair, and the last third, God scoops them out. But I have the light of God to bring me up. But so every single time on a dime. It's
totally.
It's like a Beatles song where it changes at the two thirds mark every single time.
That's like every sermon too. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's like the rhythm of Christianity. Another one I liked was, Gilead is mine and Manasseh is mine. Ephraim is my helmet, Judah my scepter. Moab is my wash basin.
Uh-huh.
Upon Edom, I toss my sandal. Because I feel like he was, like, running out of ideas. And he, like, started looking around the room. You know, he's like, Judah is my scepter and Moab is my wash basin.
Also, shouldn't he be careful about tossing his sandals around? Otherwise, someone might point at him and call him, his family, the unsandaled.
It's true.
Which,
yeah,
she's not so good.
Yeah, you got to be careful about that. Also, Psalm 137, by the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept when we remembered Zion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the title of the anthology that I'm co-editing with our former guest, Chris Stroop.
Oh, is that true?
Mm-hmm. Just by the rivers of Babylon.
That's there's a famous reggae setting of that psalm as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's been recorded by a bunch of people. It's great.
I mean, it's a famous Bible verse, obviously.
But I wanted to bust this one out when Phil was on the line feeding us questions, but I didn't get a chance to.
Because
during one of the lamentations, when he's describing the actions of his enemies, he say, "Malicious witnesses rise up. They ask me about things I do not know."
You calling Phil a malicious witness?
I maybe calling Phil a malicious witness.
He's going to have to write another Quizzle packet.
Oh, no. That was fun, though. I wouldn't mind.
I know. I would do that every episode.
If all it takes to get a quality packet is slamming Phil, then I'll do it every time.
Poor Phil.
Consider yourself on blast, Phil. I love you. This passage stood out to me, and it's something I might have told you before. Do not fret. It leads only to evil.
Hmm. You do tell me to remember my relaxmophone lessons. But I never do.
I also think that that's something you should hang up in the guitar store. Be like, don't.
Oh, like, snap.
No Stairway. Right next to No Stairway. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. There was a psalm where God was sleepy. I don't know if you got that one.
I'm not sure I remember that one.
Rouse yourself. Why do you sleep, O Lord?
That's pretty passive aggressive. However, I would like to give the award for most passive aggressive psalm to Psalm 74, which says, why have you rejected us forever, O God? It's like, wow, way to fish for a compliment.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so if we're doing superlatives, we do fucking superlatives.
Okay.
I found the braggiest psalm.
Okay.
And it's number 26.
Okay.
Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity, and I have trusted in the Lord without wavering. Prove me, O Lord, and try me. Test my heart and mind, for your steadfast love is before my eyes, and I walk in faithfulness with you.
Nice.
I do not sit with the worthless, nor do I consult with hypocrites. I hate the company of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. Yeah, I get it, okay? You're holy and righteous.
I have a super petty psalm to go with that.
Okay.
Which is Psalm 10.
Oh, I wrote down Psalm 10 too.
It's talking about the wicked man, and it says, the wicked man is haughty and your laws are far from him. He sneers at all his enemies. He says to himself, nothing will ever shake me. I'll always be happy and never have trouble. So basically, like, translation, God, I have this fucking coworker who
such a bitch
walks around like he owns the place.
I noted that psalm spends much more time describing the success of the wicked than it does on anything to do
with
God.
That's true, yeah. What do you think the horniest psalm is?
Oh, I got one. It's 45, right?
That's the exact same one I have.
Yes. I wrote down 45, horniest psalm.
Would you care to read a passage from it?
Oh, I'd love to. So it's supposedly a psalm on congratulations for a royal wedding is what the heading is.
Uh-huh.
But if you're given these kinds of congratulations, you're going to creep your fucking friends out.
You're going to get executed at the royal wedding.
Probably. This is how it starts. My heart overflows with a goodly theme. I address my verses to the king. My tongue is like the pen of a ready scribe. You are the most handsome of men. Grace is poured upon your lips. Therefore, God has blessed you forever. Gird your sword on your thigh, O mighty one, in your glory and majesty.
We know what all those things mean now after our euphemism quiz.
That's a good point. Your throne, O God, endures forever and ever. Your royal scepter is a scepter of equity. You love righteousness and hate wickedness.
And then, all glorious is the princess within her chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Her gown is interwoven with gold. It's like, okay, we're talking about God here. Try not to get distracted by the pretty lady. Just focus, man.
In the place of ancestors, you, O king, shall have sons. You will make them princes in all the earth. Yeah, well, that's how that works.
However, a valiant runner-up is Psalm 133, which I would describe as the kinkiest psalm, which says, it is like precious oil poured on the head, running down on the beard, running down on Aaron's beard, down upon the collar of his robes.
I noted that one to be the least religious psalm.
Nice.
It has very little religion in it. It's mostly just poetry.
But it's got a lot of oil.
Oil is an important part of religion, but not the main part.
I like Psalm 62 because it sounds like it was written while the person was stoned.
Okay, explain.
Okay, I have to read it in the right way. Lowborn men are like but a breath. The highborn are but a lie. If weighed on a balance, they're nothing. Together, they're only a breath. If you think about it, really crazy, man.
That's good. I like that. Oh, I had one that was the most violent, paranoid, and strange.
Oh, that's a great superlative.
kind of cheating because it's like 3-in-1. Did you ever have 3-in-1 instant coffee? Instant coffee that's got the creamer and sugar built right in, so it all comes in like a little tube.
I don't believe I have, no.
I drank.
But it sounds like the wave of the future.
It's kind of the wave of giving up. It's
like... That sounds like the future to me. That's in my future.
Psalm 35. Contend, O Lord, with those who contend against me, and fight those who fight against me. It goes into detail about how the evil should be fought. Let them be turned back and confounded who devise evil against me. Let them be like chaff before the wind, with the angel of the Lord driving them on. Let their way be dark and slippery, with the angel of the Lord pursuing them.
Oof.
Then my soul shall rejoice in the Lord, exulting in his deliverance. All my bones shall say, O Lord, who is like you? You deliver the weak.
Yay! For most relatable, I nominate Psalm 31. I am the utter contempt of my neighbors. I am a dread to my friends. Mm. Those who see me on the street flee from me.
I put that as an example of the high paranoia of some of these psalms.
I found that hashtag relatable. I don't have like a superlative for this one, but Psalm 91. You will tread upon the lion and the cobra. You will trample the great lion and the serpent.
Mm-hmm.
The libertarians are not going to be happy about this. They really don't like it when people tread on snakes.
That's what I'm told. They aren't going to be happy about it when someone tells them about the Psalms.
They just don't like it when people tread on snakes.
Got it.
That's like one of their main things. They put it on their flag.
I mean, this snake is long dead, honey. So did you have a least favorite of these Psalms?
Well, sort of. Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
Mine is very simple to explain.
Okay.
It's the longest Psalm. It's 119.
Oh my God. That's literally the one I put as my favorite.
Really?
Yes.
Uh-oh. I didn't read it all the way through. I was like, yeah, I get it. I'm moving on. And there's no way you're going to convince me to read all the way through this.
I done
fucked up.
My least favorite is Psalm 139. And it's not because of the actual content of the psalm. It's because of the political use that Christians use it for. It says, for you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth.
I see.
Your eyes saw my unformed body. And so that's what anti-abortion people use to prove, quote unquote, that the Bible says that life begins at conception.
Ugh,
even though that's not
awful. And that's just, like, that's just poetry. I don't understand.
Yeah. And that meaning wasn't even laid on it until like 1980. You know, like that wasn't something that people took out of it for hundreds and hundreds of years, but now all of a sudden it's proof that God says abortion is bad.
Why was that one your favorite? The one I picked.
So my favorite is Psalm 119. To introduce it to the listeners, it's like the longest psalm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like an acrostic alphabet.
What?
Psalm?
I didn't know that.
Oh, really? So in the first like couple stanzas, every line begins with the Hebrew letter Aleph, which is the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet.
Okay.
Then in the next one, every line begins with the Hebrew letter Bet, and then so on, Gimel, Dalet, whatever, till the end of the alphabet. And my Bible's notes say that this psalm is the most likely to have been composed in writing and intended to be read rather than sung or recited.
Ah, I see.
So most of them are, you know, like it explicitly says in a lot of them, like for stringed instruments.
Right.
Or like for wind instruments or whatever.
Yeah.
But this one was like
133 BPM. Yeah.
Yeah. They tell you, like which ones are bangers, which ones are slow songs.
They're all, spoiler alert, they're all bangers.
They're all bangers. But this one is like meant to be like written poetry that you read.
Hmm.
So that's why it was my favorite. I mean, not that it had anything really special. I mean, I think actually my favorite imagery was from Psalm 29. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars, shakes the desert, twists the oaks and strips the forest bare. I just really liked the literary value of Psalm 119.
That's totally valid. And you know what? I mean, it really exposes something. You went deep and you knew something about that, and I lazed out. I used my powerful laser and I lazed myself right out
nice.
Of that. But speaking of imagery, that was really why I picked my favorite, which is Psalm 114. It goes a little something like this. It starts, when Israel went out of Egypt, the house of Jacob from a people of strange language, Judah became God's sanctuary, Israel his dominion. The sea looked and fled, Jordan turned back. The mountains skipped like rams, the hills like lambs. Why is it, O sea, that you flee, O Jordan, that you turn back, O mountains, that you skip like rams, O hills like lambs? Tremble, O earth, at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the God of Jacob, who turns the rock into a pool of water, the flint into a spring.
Ooh, that was good.
That's pretty good, right?
I think you may have a future in...
psalmistry?
In psalmistry. Yeah, I really love the ones where, like, God is making nature do, like, things that an animal or a person would do.
I like the abstraction, like, of the actions of God being, yeah, the earth, you know, dancing or the earth prancing like an animal or whatever. That's quality imagery.
Totally.
So I don't think there's anything else to it, but...
I mean, there's, like, a lot else to it.
No,
but...
I looked not very carefully, okay. And I don't think there's anything else to it.
All right, you're right. We covered everything about the Book of Psalms.
So I think it's time to rate this book.
Oh, we didn't mention Psalm 23.
What's that?
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
Okay.
Are you even familiar with that?
I mean, I get the general idea.
He leads me to...
Like, you can't lead a watered a horse, but you can make him drink. Yeah, I understand. So Let's just rate this book.
All right. How would you rate this book?
I would give this book 130 out of 150 psalms.
Wow. Okay. I feel like your ratings are, like, subject to inflation. Like, they keep getting, like, really, really big.
Well, this one has a reason. There are 150 psalms in the book.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, I just didn't catch that.
The other ones were nonsense. You're right.
All right.
But I appreciate that check. Sometimes all you need to know is that, you know, there's a trend going on and you don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that. Okay?
That's what I'm here for.
Thank you. So the reason why I would give it that rating is, for the most part, this feels like a very genuine and very, in its small ways, very beautiful and very heartfelt, like, expression of the emotions that you feel in when you got religion or whatever.
Yeah, the emotions that you feel when you got religion.
is that not fair?
It's extremely fair.
Okay, so
you've caught the disease of religion.
Once you've got it deep down in your bones, when you're feeling it in your stones.
Here's the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Lamentation, of course. But I think... it runs the gamut of emotion and of, you know, religious poetry. Some of it's quite good. Certainly reading it the way I read it in big chunks is stupid and, like, doesn't seem to be the most effective way to do it. So I'm giving it plenty of benefit of doubt in that sense. Like, my personal reading experience was not super great just because I was slogging through, like, a whole bunch of poems that reused a bunch of the same imagery all over their selves, which I think is how you say that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm marking it off a little because some of it is like, yeah, okay. Do you really, how holy is that poem where it's just like, oh God, you're the best. Oh God, you're the best. Everybody say, oh God, you're the best over and over again. It's like, okay, anybody could come up with that.
Not anybody could come up with that. Only King David could, who literally wrote like half of these psalms. I'm going to give it like... 8 out of 11 Moabite wash basins.
Okay.
Because it does have, like, some great poetic imagery. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of the poetry is lost in translation, and obviously it loses something when you read it straight through. But I also, like, I spent the whole time, like, singing songs. You know, I was like, oh, I lift my eyes up to the mountain. As the deer panteth for the water. And so it was like, it was fun for me. I got to...
You have a lovely voice.
So I got to experience it, I guess, a little bit as, like, music from different services, the way it's supposed to be experienced. Of course, I'm not super into the whole mindset that I find familiar here.
Sure.
Of, like, just being infected with sin.
Paranoid, alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, like, how I felt for my, you know, childhood and adolescence. So I can't, like, really give it full marks for that.
That's fair. It sounds like we both had some pretty strong reservations, but gave it pretty high marks anyway.
Yeah, because it's just good. It's good poetry.
And it's so varied. I feel like you could find what you wanted in there regardless.
I agree. So thank you, David. Thank you, Asaf. Thank you, Sons of Korah.
Shout out.
I think there was a couple in here from Solomon. We super appreciate all your stringed instruments.
Yeah, keep playing that 10-string lyre.
Yep, loving it.
But that'll do it for today's show.
That will.
Before we go, we have a couple things to remind you of. First, you can follow us on Twitter, at SunSchoolDrop. You can also find us on Facebook by looking for Sunday School Dropouts, the name of the show that you just listened to.
Hurrah! you can find us online at SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
And if you have any questions or comments or, I don't know, quiz bowl packets, I guess you can send them to contact@SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
We, of course, always thank Elise Carlton for our logo and Nico for all his editing and sound engineering and music and just all the talent on this podcast.
Oh, honey, that's very sweet, but thank you.
And if you want to super, super help us out, do us a real solid, bruh, fucking rate us on iTunes. And review.
Phil mentioned it on the podcast. He rated and reviewed us on the iTunes store, and it's an extremely helpful thing to do.
You give us, you know, like 5 out of 5 Mobite wash basins or whatever.
If you wanted to. That's an example of a thing you could do. Besides that, I think that's everything.
That's everything.
We did it all.
Hurrah.
That's it.
I'm so proud of us.
Okay.
And I'm proud of you, the listeners, for sticking with us this long.
You know what? I want to take the time also to tell you listeners that I'm very proud of you. I just feel like, you know, people in your life maybe aren't appreciating you as much as they should.
We do. We appreciate you.
We honestly do. I think you're doing great. And I think you are getting through every day and doing your absolute best. And we're really proud of you for that.
And you deserve a hug and a pat on the back.
I agree. And we would give one of each to you if you were here.
And we will if we ever see you in person.
Absolutely. So for now, you'll just have to take this auditory hug and pat on the back. And it's coming in 3, 2, 1. Okay. This has been Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Nico.
I'm Lauren.
And we will see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.